Wow, we're already getting started.
Get right to it, baby. I gotta sober up by 5:30.
Yeah, we have Jeff Civilico in here, and he's having a little sip right now before his 5:30 show at the Flamingo. So here's to you, Jeff Civilico.
Good to see you, Bryce. Woo,
House Seats presents. And he is a shooter, not a sipper.
Wow, look at that.
Oh, and so with Scott, when Scott always finds a way to work that into. So we had a little visit before the show from his new property managers, and I said, "Do you have to hide the alcohol when they show up here?" Because I'm afraid that you're going to get like violated in some way. Like, we're not allowed to do that here.
Does it help, Scott?
Yeah.
Okay. Then keep on drinking.
So Scott and I were talking prior to you being here. You know, he's met you before. I've never met you before.
Yeah, which is crazy.
I know. That's the crazy. Circles that we're in life, we never meet. But I'm happy to meet you today. I'm really happy that you're here. Jeff has been in town since 2008? 2010.
Yeah, 6 years January. So just over 6 years now.
So when we're on the show and we talk to performers to find out what it's like living in Vegas, what it's like calling Vegas home, what it's like, why did you choose Vegas? That's always the answer. We're going to talk a lot about that because I'm a native. And I'm always fascinated by when people choose to be here.
And you're a native in showbiz, which is even odder.
Sort of, yeah.
You know, business, showbiz marketing.
It's interesting, and we'll talk about your story, because it's interesting when you're inspired by someone, what your progression of your life continues to be. And that's something, when I was reading some more about you, that really inspired me. So I'm really excited to talk to you today. We usually do a little weekend roundup of what's happened in the weekend. Okay. I have nothing new to report, although I came home last night from California and I found myself trying to fall asleep watching Finding Neverland.
Oh.
Did you ever see that movie with Johnny Depp?
Yes, I have.
Sort of the pseudo story of how Peter Pan was developed and the idea and that it's sort of based on true stories and things like that. At the same time as I'm reading about you.
Oh, and Peter Panic.
Yeah, hearing about Peter Panic to you. And I was a little emotional last night. Don't ask me. I don't know what happened. You know, that movie is very emotional. But, you know, it's basically finding your way into joy, into Neverland, into your dreams.
Sure. Yeah.
And the little boy, not to give away the spoiler of the movie, but the little boy's name is Peter. And Johnny Depp, you know, basically says he writes this play for Peter. And Peter says to Johnny Depp at the end of the movie, "No, you're Peter. Like, you're the one who inspired me."
Right.
And well, how your
there's
life.
There's a parallel there.
Yeah.
With myself and Peter Pan.
So I want to get right into that because to me, you know, the trajectory of your life is always based on when you're inspired by someone.
Mm-hmm.
And when something hits you so strongly that you know where you're going and you know what you want to do. You may not know how the world will unfold, but that's sort of how it happened for you. Can you tell everybody sort of how you got into the business you're in or
inspiration? Yeah, I mean, I tell the story in my show, so it's fun to have the opportunity to share it here as well. I was picked to be a volunteer when I was about 7 years old by a street performer outside. There he is, right there. Peter Panic was his name. Nice. At least that's what it was, his stage name. And he was a street performer in Boston Square.
Okay.
Or sorry, rather Harvard Square, right outside of Boston in Cambridge. My oldest brother went to Harvard for college. We were there visiting on a family trip.
Okay.
And he picked me to be a volunteer. I did a little routine with spinning plates. Didn't think anything of it. Parents bought me the Klutz book of juggling. For the complete Klutz with the little three beanbag set.
Yeah, yeah. I think my dad has those.
And, you know, that started it all for me. So obviously it wasn't the juggling necessarily. It was kind of being in front of the crowd and the lights and, you know, that energy and that rush. Even at 7 years old, I thought to myself, I like this. I want more of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents bought me that book, and then I got really into juggling as a little kid. And juggling was always just the medium to be, you know, just kind of connect with the audience. It was never about the juggling. It was about doing the shows. And so I just started performing I was the dorky kid doing magic and juggling shows in my kitchen for my parents after dinner. Pulling out the card table, and I had my confetti vest. There it is, right on cue, and matching bow tie.
Nice.
Look at that stud muffin right there.
I love it.
Clearly, at that point in my career, I was handling wardrobe. look at that. Wow.
Oh, okay. I love it.
God, where'd
you
find
little circles.
These?
I like these.
Yeah, thanks for blurring out my
really?
Zits.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Oh, you know.
There you go. Close
you got a
up.
Hat this time.
Close that's up nice. On the zits there. That's perfect. Yeah, that's... Yep, I had a bunch of different confetti vests, as you can see, different shapes and styles, depending on what the situation calls for. And now there's back to Peter, who looks much better as a performer. His vests are a little more stylish. Okay, all right. Look at me. Like, I'm just lounging. Like, I'm just hanging
this
around.
This is good. This
hey there.
Was this your early like headshots?
This is my first
sort of screenshots?
Promo shoot. Yeah, yep, this is from a very embarrassing comp card.
When you were working maybe like... after dinner crowds at your family parties and
you
stuff.
You know what?
Like
I used to do, at this point in my career, no joke, I was performing. Yeah. I was like big on the blue and gold Cub Scout banquet circuit.
Oh.
So I was probably, you know, about to head out to a banquet and do my
I remember
show.
Those. I was actually a Boy Scout. I remember going to those.
I was the entertainment. Gold,
yeah.
Yeah. I actually remember that's we're going off topic here, but what
that's all right.
So I remember I got my first booking and I had like no idea what they were going to pay me. I didn't think we were going to talk to that. You know, I was like, oh, my, and you're going to pay me? And so
they paid you in merit badges.
Yeah. And brownies. But I remember my dad opened up the door after when I got dropped back off from doing this show. And I remember so cocky, I walked into the kitchen table and I remember slamming down 80 bucks, like four 20s. Cause I mean, I was, you know, probably like, I think I might even be younger than that. I was maybe 12, 13. That to me was, you know, I was loaded.
They paid you $80.
They paid me $80 to do the show. Not bad.
That's pretty damn good.
Right. And well, and especially when you saw how crappy the show was. I mean, the show was literally just me standing there and juggling, like not even, yeah. Exactly.
All Boy Scout eyes on
you.
Like,
I hear you have
I'm going to hear you. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, so it was, you know, but my dad and I joke about this now because my dad's a dentist.
Okay.
And he had no concept that people would pay real money for entertainment.
Gotcha.
You know, and obviously as you progress further, hopefully, you know, at this point, I'm receiving more than $80 a show.
Right, right.
But, you know, at the time, my dad was thinking to me, he's thinking, you know, hey, this kid's getting $80 for a banquet. You know what I mean? At only, you know, as a teenager, you know, it was kind of the first time we thought, like people pay real money for this. And then, you know, I think he was surprised as I kept progressing and, you know, working at theme parks and so, they're going to pay you this much a week. And then cruise ships, you know, you paid a few $1,000s a week to come on and do your show one night a week. And so it was just kind of funny because we talk about that moment that, you know, that was the first moment my dad thought, you know,
Make money.
Yeah. This is like that.
So
you know,
he encouraged you.
Oh yeah, my parents. Yeah, it's funny because people. I think I hate when people, you know, see the end product or the end result of someone, and then they want to retrofit the story that they think is like dramatic in Hollywood. And I love it, but I have in that sense like the most boring story ever because like. Both parents love me. Yeah. They're very happy with me. They're very proud of me.
Isn't that interesting?
I have two brothers who, like we're all cool.
Right.
It was never like, were you banished as a child, like up in your room juggling and they would leave food for you by the door. You know, people make these stories, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, what do your parents think of you? I'm like, they think it's cool. Like I get to perform for a living and you know, they've always supported me. There was never any, you know, like kitchen table conversation.
Right.
Mom, dad, I want to be a juggler. Like,
right.
No.
Well,
you know?
No, when you're saying you met
Peter. Oh, speaking of, there's a kitchen table.
Oh, nice.
Wow, that was great timing. Scott, you are good.
That's an awful big knife to cut a cake with.
So that was the juggling knife that I received for my 14th birthday.
You juggle with that?
I still
at
do.
At 14?
Same knife.
Whoa.
Look at that.
Oh, shit.
Just waiting for like the toilet sound effect.
Right.
Like, whoosh.
Oh, he's got that.
Yeah, I bet you do.
There you go.
Really?
Right?
Really? But no, I actually tell this story in my show as well that I received the juggling knives for my 14th birthday. And so that's me cutting the cake with the knife. And I say in the show, and it's true, it shows I haven't changed my act in 18 years. Scott liked that one. Hey, right there.
But even, I know, but even with, you know, like with Peter, you're meeting him outside of Harvard. There's no, in that thought process, you know, you're sending your brother off to college to Harvard. There's no like, okay, Jeff, this is what's going to happen to you next.
Right.
And you're like, I'm outside with a street performer outside of Harvard. As close as you're going to get to doing Harvard in your sense. But I love this.
Yeah.
I love this story.
Yeah. So, I mean, I came from a very academic family.
Yeah.
My oldest brother, Gene, went to Harvard. My other brother, John, went to Georgetown.
Okay.
I went to Georgetown. I saw both the experiences that they had.
Okay.
And, you know, I was really drawn to Georgetown for a variety of reasons. But same kind of thing. People, you know, always, you know, they want some story of, you know, some crazy dramatic story that's not there. I literally just always kind of pursued what I wanted to do. So I studied, but knowing that I was always performing, I performed throughout college and, you know, hosted, you know, talent shows on campus. And I did gigs. I used to work at DC Improv a fair amount.
Okay.
With the improv chain there. It was kind of the local, you know, local favorite because I was a college kid. So I got the call when, to be honest, you know, somebody missed their flight, you know, on a Tuesday coming in or, you know, somebody bailed a comedian. So they'd call me because they knew I would just, you know, jump on the metro and go down there and, you know, do a little set. So, it's cool. I mean, I feel very fortunate to have always pursued this because I wanted to. And I've always kind of made the joke that, like, you know what, if I end up not enjoying this for whatever reason, I'm going to do something else. And, you know, I joke about, like, oh, I'll go to law school, like all my friends did or something. Or,
right.
You know, but it's kind of nice to do something because you genuinely want to do it. And, I've always just said when, you know, if the audience is having fun, or if I'm having fun, the audience is having fun. And if I stop having fun, it becomes a chore. then I'm just going to give it up and move kind of, you know, in more maybe in your world, you know, where, you know, kind of the entertainment marketing and the entrepreneurial branding sense, because obviously I have that skill set with producing the show and that's developed. So, but I still love every day on stage and absolutely love it. I feel like there's so many performers who gripe about not having work and then they get work and then gripe about having work. I'm like, dude, just pick
one. That's
like,
everyone.
Yeah, but it's annoying. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that's
you're
why
doing
I feel,
what you love.
Yeah, I got a show every night at the Flamingo. That's awesome. I'm not gonna be mad that, you know, I can't make somebody's dinner. It's fine. I'll be there for drinks afterwards. You know, because I finally got that show that I've always wanted. So, you know, I think it's important to there's all those cheesy things, you know, you could say about, you know, when you're climbing the ladder of success, make sure, you know, it's leaning up against the right wall, you know, but you know, but the those things like that, right? But the point is valid. It's like, you know, what? Yeah, exactly. Is that the girl at the Cub Shop banquet? Oh God.
But at Georgetown.
But there's a point there. Yeah. You know, my point is like, you know, if you set your sights on something and you work toward it and you get it, like, be happy about it, embrace it, and love every single day of it, every second of it, because you know there are so many people, countless entertainers, who want that spot and who are dying to have a show at a place like the Flamingo. So grateful.
Yeah. Well, no, and your tenacity is infectious. I mean, I think for and the drinking too. See, that helps. But I think for you, the interesting thing is like what I've seen from what I know about you is that you just go all out and you're going to make it or you're going to break it. You're going to keep going. You're going to keep doing. And I think that's what any testament of, like you said, if you knew at 7 in a mindset, not even what you were going to do, but in a mindset of seeing someone else do something and being inspired and every day working towards that is a huge wake up for a lot of people who as young people who aren't always, you know, like you said, that story, and I don't think the story is boring at all. I think the story is inspirational because a lot of times you hear, and we've heard people like, oh, don't go into this business, don't go into that business.
Yeah.
And even going to Georgetown. Now, my brother-in-law went to Georgetown, but he went for law.
Okay.
And did they have a juggling school in Georgetown or did you perform?
No, but they did have a juggling club.
They
The Georgetown Props.
Wow.
Yes, of which I was a...
Wonder if you think they're still there?
That's a good question.
The Georgetown Props are still...
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
If you're listening, guys...
If you're listening from Georgetown...
Yeah. Right in.
But
I don't know.
But I mean, you know, going to a school like that, and like you're saying, if you could fall back on another area or something like that, but you always knew in your mind that this was going to take you places.
Sure. What's so crazy is that, you know, in the new Vegas, right, with four-walling and with, you know, building your own business and brand is I don't think I could have gotten better training than what I learned at Georgetown. And it has nothing to do with what I actually studied, just like it never has to do. It's never the actual subject matter, right, of anything. It's always what you learn from it, your people skills, how you build yourself. So that's why I feel like that, you know, degree from Georgetown, that education completely prepared me because it was about time management and working with people and, you know, being involved and engaging and really finding what makes me tick and what makes me happy. That was big for me. That's I was at Georgetown. I really kind of discovered myself and what I wanted to do with my life. And I had amazing teachers, amazing deans, professors that supported me in that. So you would think that they would be discouraging that or say, no, like you need to do something more serious. And in fact, it was, again, the least sexy version of the story. They're like, dude, you're awesome. You're a great performer. You can, it shows you love to do it. You know, you're smart. You have business sense. So, you know, you can market yourself, you know, go for it. So, I have gone back to school and, I've actually, you know, given little seminars or been invited to speak at classrooms of, you know, deans and teachers that I had. And they're, you know, world religions teachers or they're, you know, philosophy teachers. They're not even, you know, business or a business school or marketing or entertainment or theater. It's, you know, across all different genres. So.
But your story relates. And I think that's.
Yeah.
That's. So I was reading a little bit about your time at Georgetown. You were in tell me about a singing group you might have been in.
Oh, wow.
I like knowing that you have a little bit of background in the music. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely not us. We were not that good.
That sounded like the Angels Choir.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was not our all-male a cappella.
No. Okay.
No, yeah. It was. Nice. We're called The Chimes. We are still in existence since 1946. It's an all-male a cappella group.
Gosh.
And the thing that makes The Chimes so special is it's a lifelong organization.
Yeah.
So group was founded in 1946. There are annual reunions with all the guys and their families.
Wow.
And it's kind of, you know, you could relate it to. It has some frat-type tendencies. Georgetown's Catholic school, so there's no frats. So your activity kind of becomes your frat.
Gotcha.
You know, if you're on the football team, you guys have a house, you know, you have parties. Same kind of thing, right? When you're in the all-male a cappella group since 1946, the Georgetown Chimes. Here Comes Trouble.
Yeah, right.
We
didn't find any YouTube clips of this, but
they're out there.
Yeah, okay.
Don't search too hard. Oh, really? It didn't take long.
And our lovely scar. There you go. Look at those. Yeah.
Well, these are the current guys.
Okay,
But you know what? I had phenomenal experiences with the Chimes. We got to sing all over the world. It is, all joke aside, it is a prestigious group to be a part of. They take maybe two or three guys each year. So you have a group of about 10 or 12 guys.
Okay.
Yeah, and in my time, we performed in Paris, San Juan, Rome, all over. We went domestically, did shows in Boston and San Antonio and LA and everything. So, we did some great gigs. We performed, in my time, it was for George W. Bush at the president's Christmas party.
Oh,
so
wow.
To get to sing at the White House.
So you were at the White House?
Yeah, as like a freshman
out
in high
of here.
School. Yeah, we did a show at the Ronald Reagan building.
Okay.
And the Kennedy Center and things. So, yeah, we were, pretty good. We joke because you either got in because you were an amazing singer or you brought stage presence to the group, and there's always a direct correlation, with an inverse relation, I should say, between the really good singers. Generally didn't have as much of the flair and fun, but the fun guys were more of the improv guys who could, carry a tune, but they weren't going to be the soloists and that. So I was kind of on that side of it.
You had the stage presence.
Yeah, I can I can sing.
I can see that.
Decently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think they like the juggling routines and the other things that I brought to it. But we had a ton of fun and still some of my my best buddies.
Wow. If you go back for reunions and you're together and you have and when you go to these reunions, you actually sing together? Do they do like moments of
We okay, do. Okay. Yeah. So it's actually nice. Really, really cool. There's a banquet every Saturday night. Uh-huh. They call it the weekend's kind of the centerpiece of the weekend, and they start with the original guys from the 40s, and they get up and sing a set. And then it goes to the 50s and the 60s and 70s. And the guys obviously get progressively better, which is the point, because then the show closes with the current students, and they're of course awesome.
Yeah.
And so it's really fun to watch a couple guys up there. I mean, some of them are walkers and wheelchairs, and they sound awful, but we all love them. We all give them a standing ovation. And then the shows get kind of better and better and more fun. And it's just kind of a nice way to honor the heritage of the group. And keep everybody together. So the kind of the phrase, the motto, I guess you could say, of the group is fellowship through harmony.
Yeah.
So before you can get into the group and get your chime number.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a chime number.
What's your number?
Okay, fine, I'll tell you. I am number 193.
I like how you just did that with your pink. I'm 193.
Yes, yes. Deep breath.
Wow.
That's so
really
when
cool,
you're one
though.
Of the, you have to learn all the songs of the previous generations.
Oh my
because
gosh.
The point is that you bond through singing. So if, let's just say three chimes walked in here. One was from the 60s, one was from the 90s, one was a current student. We could pop up and sing like 200 barbershop songs.
Oh my gosh.
So there's a lot of useless second tenor barbershop taking up probably some very valuable real estate in my brain.
We should do one of those later.
Hey, if you want, do you sing?
I had a acapella group when I was in fourth grade.
Okay.
And we traveled around to all the classrooms. There was four of us guys.
All the classrooms.
All the classrooms.
I was say all the different, state competitions classrooms.
No, well, I sang in choirs that took me like to Hawaii and different places when I was. I actually sang.
What voice part?
I was the bass.
Okay. So
I
we got I'm second tenor. We can make this work, right?
We could. We might
let's,
have to
let's leave this whole that. House seats.
Yeah. We're going to try a different career here, everybody.
Goodbye, my Coney Island.
I don't know that. My Coney Island girl. See, that's an East Coast thing.
Oh,
I don't
sorry.
Know if we had, we didn't really
do Coney
sing
Island.
That. No,
what'd
we
you,
didn't.
You do?
I don't think we knew what Coney Island was when I was in fourth grade.
Like California girls?
Yeah.
All right.
We'll figure that out.
Yeah, we're gonna.
So take me to take me to Vegas, Jeff.
Oh.
Take me to how you transported yourself into Las Vegas and why you chose Las Vegas. Mm. Does that need another shot for you?
No. I got to sober up by 5:30.
I'll give you a little.
I got knives to juggle.
Yeah.
Torches.
Yeah.
So Vegas. Yeah. You know what? I always wanted to have a show in Vegas. And when you are a kid in your kitchen doing variety shows, right? Anything with juggling, magic, puppets, whatever you're into, you dream of having a Las Vegas show.
And you do. A kid. God.
Yeah. And you know what's cool? Because
it's
now
amazing.
I meet other performers, that are now my peers, and we talk about it. And that thread is constant.
That's cool.
We almost all of us have always wanted to have a show in Vegas because, let's face it, that's a stamp of credibility.
Okay.
And that's like an idea that
you've made it.
Yeah, of a certain level, right?
That's
Until
cool.
you get to Vegas, you get your own show and you realize that having a show in Vegas is nothing like what you thought. But by then, it's too late. And so you figure out how to make it work.
And your name is already here. You right. can't leave.
Really, though, that's a blessing and a curse. Is, yeah. That's exactly true, is that the idea of having a Vegas show is nothing like what you could possibly have imagined as right. a kid, right? So when you do get to be in that position, yeah. Fortunately, I have, it's a horrible picture.
With a plunger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That
you have to clean the bathrooms at your show, too.
Yeah. That's part don't of laugh at job. That, Scott. That was a genuine laugh from the belly there. Unbelievable. Yeah, so, but what you realize is that that is just the beginning.
Yeah.
And that this thing that you thought was the goal and was the end mm-hmm. point, it actually is this awesome kind of rebirth, because now you have a platform and you do have that kind of official stamp that you are an established, seasoned entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes, what can you do with that platform? And yeah. then with me personally, that's where you get Win-Win Entertainment. That's where you get Showbiz Academy. That's where you get Las Vegas Good News TV show. Like
yeah.
all these other projects that right. fuel me, corporate shows, training programs, you know, workshops, team building workshops, keynote yeah. presentations. Those, that to me, that's the good stuff. And so, you know, it's funny because if I had known all that was out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know if it would have, you know, dissuaded me from pursuing that, because I right. thought the goal was something else than it was.
Right.
So, you know, I feel very grateful that I do have this platform now, and that I can, you know, create things like Win-Win Entertainment, my nonprofit, and Give Back Sunday's program that I do at the show, where we,
yeah.
you know, donate 50% of ticket sales back every Sunday, and all these different things now, that's kind of what I live for, in advancing those.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people think, oh, you have a show, you know, they think that that's what it's about.
Right.
It's not. That's
your platform.
Yeah. I'm doing things like this. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
yeah.
today I was doing production meetings for this week's TV show, and I was, yeah. you know, working on, we're filming Third Eye Blind tomorrow night.
Okay.
At they're doing a concert at Foundation Room, and
okay.
we're getting them to come on the High Roller.
Nice.
And so we're working on questions for Third Eye Blind, and
they're going to be in that little room in the Foundation Room right there, where they usually
yeah.
have a restaurant.
Yeah.
They have a little stage up there. It's mm-hmm. awesome. That's
yeah,
a cool way to do a
private,
concert. Yeah, yeah.
Charity event.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know, like that's the kind of, and that's exciting.
Right.
Like
yeah.
I'm excited to meet yeah. Third Eye Blind tomorrow night.
Yeah,
like that stuff pumps me up. So you know, I just think it's all about perspective, and you know, when you're you know, how you can kind of utilize the platforms that you know, you're able to
well, your get. Life unfolds now.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, I'm happy to hear that you wanted to come to Vegas.
Yeah,
because as a person from Vegas, you right. know, I always wonder why people choose here. That is a very valid and inspiring story to hear, that you want to come here. This is where you see yourself being.
Yeah.
And the work that happens once you get here, whether you're the one producing your own show, doing the marketing for your own show, all that stuff leading up to, you know, where you are now. I mean, when you first came here, did you automatically go into working with Nathan Burton, or
no.
you had a show right
no.
off the bat?
No, so I actually had the benefit. I mean, it was unfortunate at the time, but I was involved in a show that failed, that,
okay.
didn't work.
Okay.
But I was just talent. I had no skin in the game. I had no money into it.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't producing it. And so I was actually able to watch and learn exactly what not mm-hmm. to do to produce a show in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And now you're looking back and you're like, oh, dude, we never had a chance. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, with certain people involved and certain people we were working with and certain, you know, just, you know, marketing decisions we made with money. I'm like,
yeah.
dude, why would you ever spend money on that? You
yeah.
know, now that I'm looking back now, it's just such a, I mean, you know, you could, there's millions of examples like this, but it's a classic thing. We had all the billboards, the cabs, this and that. And, you know, we didn't have a relationship with the concierge community, with the ticket brokers, mm-hmm. with timeshares, you know. So, I mean, I would rather spend my money to, you know, buy the back cover of the Taxi Trip Sheet mm-hmm. magazine to invite taxis to come for free
yeah.
to watch the show, that for, you know, 1/20th of the price of getting a fleet of cabs, you know, taxi toppers.
Yeah.
Like, that does nothing. At that
yep.
level,
mm-hmm,
right? You know,
mm-hmm.
when you're at another level, it does, an awareness. But at our level, at like 2:30 p.m. at the V Theater,
yeah.
like a couple guys,
you need
trying
more
to figure
word
it
of
out.
Mouth than anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, we need to get people
you know,
to get in to see the show
yeah.
and the call center visits and the, you know, all the things that we didn't do.
Right.
So it was kind of nice actually looking back on it, being able to watch and see how not to do it.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from that experience, and I'm grateful for it. And everybody had the best of intentions, but it just didn't, we weren't even in the game. So
but
that was my first experience.
And I think, you know, I mean, that's actually how we started House Seats. And that's same general sense. It was word of mouth. It was creating buzz about shows so
yep.
that shows can continue to be motivated to keep going. I think, but that's interesting because you started out at the V Theater.
Yeah.
At Planet Hollywood, well, now Planet Hollywood. Was
yeah.
it then Planet Hollywood? Or was it
yeah.
Planet
yeah.
Aladdin?
No, it was
always Planet Hollywood.
Page, yeah.
For you, and then from there, so you had that showroom under your belt. So you've been a few showrooms in Vegas.
Oh
in
yeah.
sense, so you can see how
yeah.
the different places operate and, sure. and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole another mm-hmm. episode. It's kind of the different, you know, kind of jumps and lateral moves around Vegas. But, you know, to make a long story short, I think you could say that I was able to leverage one platform for the next one.
Yeah.
I created a dinner show, was the main one. I created a dinner show at Planet Hollywood Restaurant at the Forum Shops at Caesar's Palace that I was able to kind of build up on my own. And again, the whole premise was I don't want to have overhead.
Yeah.
Because it's very expensive,
right.
But I need a platform. And so I created this. I thought to myself, what could I bring where I wouldn't get charged anything? And the answer was dinners. So I thought if I could bring a restaurant dinners, then I could sell tickets on top of that.
Yeah.
So for a year and a half plus, we did a show at Planet Hollywood Restaurant. By we, I mean me. I said we. It was a solo show. It was, you know, I ran, but I did everything. I ran. Yeah. I took the tickets at the gift shop. The credit cards. I went up through the kitchen. I set up. I took the tickets.
You made the food?
Pretty much.
Got it.
When they needed it. I did the whole show. I had a remote control iPod Velcro to my belt that I played the music from. I turned on my own spotlight in the back. I really did. It was a full one-man
show. When you
were
a one-man show, you were literally a one-man show.
One-man show. I sold all the merchandise, cleaned it up, packed it all up, put it back into the storage room at Planet Hollywood.
And that's why you had the plunger in your hand.
That's a real story. Then I cleaned the toilets.
And you cleaned the toilets.
Exactly. So,
good gracious.
And so I was able to use that to build up some buzz. Actually, there was an article, VegasChatter.com, no longer exists, actually. Okay. It's just sad, but it was an awesome website. One of their people randomly found the show because it kind of had like a hidden gem rep because there was no marketing.
Right.
There was no ads anywhere. In a related story, we made a lot of money because like there was no overhead.
Because we didn't have that.
Really.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it was $10 a ticket. So it was $25. I give the restaurant $15 and I keep $10.
Yeah.
And then we packed about 140, 150 chairs in there every night and it was like sold out for
and people
a year and
like
a half,
food and shows together. Because they don't always want to talk to their spouse, so they go to these shows. No, I mean, it's true.
It's a great excuse.
The old way was having that dinner and show package.
The Tony and Tina model. Mm-hmm.
It was funny. People still ask about that,
Great.
In New York, they're like, where's my dinner?
Right.
They want that piece of it, too, because it's distraction.
Well, and it was good it was a win-win, and everybody was happy.
Yeah.
And this Vegas chatter.
It's back to your blue and gold dinners from the Boy Scouts.
Exactly.
Just a different group of people.
Same act. And they wrote an article, and this woman, Becca, wrote an article that was really complimentary and said, hey, there's this hidden gem kind of a show. I just stumbled upon it. It's in this upstairs room.
Yeah.
I think this kid's going to do really well in this town. I talked to him afterwards for a little bit and I had no idea that they were, what they were exactly.
Yeah.
With the tourism website and everything.
Sure.
And they wrote an article and that blogging community here is pretty tight. And so other blogs started coming. Vital Vegas, which Scott Robin runs, Scott kind of came around and was like, hey, this guy's great. And all these different blogs started writing. And then, so I started getting some, buzz, I guess you'd say, and execs and things coming. And I was able to use that to turn that into a showcase with Caesars at the time at the Imperial Palace.
Okay.
Rest in peace.
I know. Now it's the link.
Yeah.
And then I went through
5 rebrands.
Okay.
I think I have the record in the most amount of time because I started off at the Imperial Palace at 2 p.m.
Okay.
And then it changed to the Quad at 2 p.m. And then it was the Quad at 4 p.m.
Uh-huh.
And then it was the Link at 4 p.m. And then I moved to the Flamingo at 2 and 4 p.m. And now I'm at Flamingo at 5:30 p.m. Yeah.
So you're...
It's a lot of money in printing.
I know. But the nice thing is you have that still sort of afternoon show aspect that people really want to come to.
Yeah.
And to go to what you were saying about all the Vegas blogs and things, if you look up Jeff, he is the recipient of many of these blogs awards for entertainers of the year on some of the other Vegas lists. It's a testament to who you are. Oh, there you are with Mike Tyson.
That's right.
And then you progress to this. We'll get to that. But I think that's one of the things that I think for people who really realize that when you're an entertainer in Vegas and what that means to put on a show and then like you said, and to progress. I mean Nathan Burton, I love. I love Nathan, Nancy, Emily, they're all great people, all involved in the show community. And to get another platform like you did with them, and then to culminate that now into what you're doing now. How does that feel for you now in Vegas? Not to have arrived, because that's the wrong word, but I think you're, like you said, you're living out the next progression of the dream. You're like, dreams realized. Right. You have now figured out.
I would say the word is like established. I feel like I'm established
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
I know. I think responsibility comes with that. I'm known as saying yes to like everything.
Yeah.
Because I do. I mean, if I'm around, I'll help out, because yeah. I don't think that the things that I'm being asked to do, I don't think of them as work.
Right.
You know, a lot of times
that's
it's
great.
Like, hey, can you stop by this, you know, Easter egg party for, you know, junior league, for example, you know,
yeah.
or something that benefit children, there's that. And, you know, it's to me, I'm like, you know, people want me to stop by just to hang out or do a couple of tricks, you know, talk
right.
to kids, you know, that means something to them. That to me is very special that I, you know, I feel like, how could I say no to that?
And I can't believe that we're almost out of time here. This is literally
half hour?
We are literally wow. talking to Jeff. We're going to talk to Jeff again,
let's
but his show is Good News, Las Vegas Good News.
Yes.
It airs Thursdays on Channel 13 or
so
over the weekend.
We tape Thursdays.
Tape live at the Link.
Yeah. Come on out around 5, 6 p.m.
We're going to come this Thursday. We're going to come out this Thursday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're going to come out. We
cool.
couldn't come out this last time because it was St. Paddy's Day, but we will
that.
Be out. We want to check it out. It looks, you cover dining, you cover shows.
Yeah.
You cover events, you cover people. He interviews celebrities inside the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
At the Link.
We're interviewing Third Eye Blind tomorrow night,
so
they'll
awesome.
Be on the they'll be on the show on Thursday
night.
They'll
be on Thursday night. Okay.
Oh.
We're already out of time. So
that was crazy.
I'm the one drinking still because he has to go entertain. So
empty.
He'll have an empty glass. But hey, we're going to have you again.
Yes,
seriously.
Please, anytime.
He does lots. He does volunteer. He does tons of things.
You're a good man.
I love you. I can already tell
too.
That. I love him. Thanks for watching, guys. Bye.
Woo.